Oh, we missed you. We missed you. We missed you. Welcome to another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast with Josh Tolley, the one and only. It's been, what, more than a month, and we've been trying to figure it out. It's a, hey, we know everybody's busy. We know everybody's hectic. We also need a summer vacation. Ricky is supposed to join us in a couple of minutes. He's in Canada, so I think the Wi-Fi is different. Tolley is on his farm, ready to go. Tolley, before Ricky gets here, I missed you. How you been?
Yeah, I've been doing great. I miss you guys as well. Vacations seem to be in the mix, and it was appropriate, much needed before fall and winter. So it's good to be back. I'm sure everybody's thrilled that we're back. So let's do it. Ricky, yeah, the internet's bad in Canada. He's still figuring it out.
Yeah, I like how you said then it's fall and winter. Once again, LA people, we have no idea what that means.
Oh, yeah, you don't know what that means. No, yeah, no. It's fall. The trees start turning colors here soon.
No clue what you mean again. So let's give everybody a background of what's been going on. It's been a while because we've been busy. I've been running around. Football training camps have started here in Southern California, so I had to go to Charger camp one day while we had a schedule. Tolley was doing a bunch of other stuff. Ricky has been in Canada all of August. He had mentioned he bought a house, and so he joined it. So he's getting all that going on. And here he comes. The one and only Ricky Romero joins us.
Yeah, there he is.
So the
Wi-Fi does work in Canada.
It does. I found the room where this house is four stories.
Oh.
And I found out the Wi-Fi router is in the floor way downstairs, and this is where it gets the best internet.
All right. So, okay, we got you, though. We got you. We're good. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, Ricky has a ladder behind him. It's a brand new house that he bought in Canada. So,
I got this.
Oh, I thought it was a ladder. Oh, I'm sorry. We got our own picture and poster, whatever that is, painted of you.
I got to set up my man cave right here, man. Boom.
Hold on 1 second. Isn't that unbelievable? I still have March's schedule behind me, and this guy just bought a house and he's got a man cave around.
Hey, dude, I came and dropped it off. A friend of mine, he's like, hey, I got into like digital photograph or something. I don't know if that's right, the correct term, but he's like, what was one of your career best games? I was like, probably a CG in Yankee Stadium. So he redid that picture and then wrote the date. Everything on it, like the line, and
that's cool. That is cool. All right, so well, we haven't missed much, Rick. This is just a quick episode to catch up, people. I know people have been like, hey, where have you guys been? What have you guys been doing?
Sorry, that's my bad. I just honestly, this is what's going on. So I'm sure you guys can relate. So we've been here since August 5th. And the month of July, the kids are in school. So, you know, we knew we had a routine. We knew how to, you know, they go to school. We have some free time. Well, dude, we didn't even think of that when we came here. We have the kids 24/7. So we've been busy as shit. Look, so talk about having to parent, really, really parent. It's been parenting. Hasn't been much of a vacation, so. We have the kids 24/7, and yeah, it's just been. I'm dead by the end of the day. I wake up to like 80 text messages in the morning by you guys, and you guys are talking about the Dodger game. The Dodger game, I'm like long gone, and Dodger game's part of that.
Ricky's on Tolley time. Tolley was talking about how his kids don't go back to school until after Labor Day, so he still got them at home.
Yeah. No, Ricky, I feel you. Dude, I homeschooled my kids last year. Imagine that.
Nine, I can't. No. Seven, I would.
6-year-old. Put my head through the screen.
I'd quit being a dad if that was the case.
I love them. They're amazing. I love them. But holy crap. September 9th, I just re-enrolled them in school. And I sent the paperwork to the school. I hand-delivered it. No questions asked. Here's the paperwork. And the lady goes, why are you so happy? I said, why am I so happy? Because I was the teacher last year, and I don't have the mental capacity to do it. And she's like, oh, I feel you.
Yeah, so.
Totally fired himself.
It's been like that. It's been like we have the two boys and the newborn. And then it's been like I don't know. I'm sure you guys are going getting that same heat wave, Josh.
Yeah.
It's hot, right? And our house has two AC units, and one of them blew out, and that's the one from the kitchen. So it's been an absolute sauna there. So we've been dealing with that, and yeah, again, it's just readjusting. It took us a good week to adjust. Like I could tell, Cara, we were both like frustrated because we didn't know what to do. But now we found the parks around here and stuff like that. So it's been pretty cool. It's actually we had just now. That's why I was a little late. We had to extend our trip a few days just because we're doing renovations in our home back in Hermosa, and they're not going to be done by this week. So we're going to say like. We're going to say 3 extra days. I make sure, Beto, that Carl was like, let's come back like Saturday or Sunday. I was like, no. Sunday's a big day. I got to be back. It's our fantasy football draft. So.
Live, or are you guys doing it on the internet?
Live at Ricky's house.
We're getting a hibachi guy. He's going to come and cook for us. And yeah.
It's $150 to get in. And that doesn't include league fee. That includes just the food. The hibachi guy.
That's
so
fair, though.
We were ready to give away spots. A friend, Marco, didn't register, so I registered twice and took his spot. And I was ready to sell him. I'm like, he's like, he just wants to go to the hibachi. I'm like, I just want the hibachi. I'm like, hey, you can buy my other team because I got two teams now. He was taking forever. So here we go. Our last podcast was July 13th. We missed you guys. And thanks to everybody that keeps on sending messages like, where are you guys? And they just giving you the behind the scenes of how hard it is to actually do a podcast. To get everybody's schedule lined up, and that's why we do it Tuesdays at 10, where we know it, schedule, boom, ready to go. But then you mentioned life happens where I got to go, or Ricky's got to go, or Tully's got to go. And it's like, we could do it just one person, but the vibe and the energy is with us three. And then today we're like, okay, we're going to do it no matter what, because our fans on Instagram and the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram, Blue Jay Fans UK, Alaska Jones, Justin Jones, Billy Wardlow, Diamond Bums, people just sending messages. You guys still exist? You guys still there? Ruben Polanco. Ruben Polanco sent him a message like, hey, I need you guys. I drive in traffic on Tuesdays. I need to listen to you guys. So we're here for you. Tor Pan 13 sent a message. Hoping we get another Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. It's been a month, guys. Come on, crying face. So we appreciate everybody who's there for you, because it's a podcast that's unique. It's fun. And it just gives you the stories behind the scenes. And there's been so much going on here. All right, Tully, I want to start with you.
Okay.
Because you're the guy who's in that baseball world right now. So in the summer, there's a bunch of camps everywhere. Are you like Mr. Coach all day, all night right now?
No, I'm not. No, I don't. I did one camp. But I'm working on some stuff, staying in the youth space. I do enjoy youth sports, youth baseball. But I have to tell you what I've been busy with is freaking fixing my tractors. They keep breaking and pissing me off. That's what I've been doing, guys. Huh?
I was not expecting that answer, Rick.
That's what I've been doing. I have not been doing – now that the Little League is over.
Okay.
The Little League is done. So now this is kind of the final touches before we get into the fall and the winter. It's like you got to cut the wood. You have to mow the grass down, get it – hopefully it dies off soon. I'm tired of mowing grass.
Rick, that's your guy.
Hey, man, I'm learning all about – so my father-in-law lives here with us in Toronto, and he's the one that oversees everything. And he's like, I see lawnmowers, I see snow blowers, and I'm like, what the heck are those? And he was like showing me the other day, this is what you do with these, and I'm like, what? And we're coming here in December, we're gonna come spend the holidays, because again, Cara hasn't really seen her family, so we figured we'd come back in December, spend a couple weeks, hopefully it snows for the kids. But yeah, so I'm gonna find myself probably shoveling my driveway, and I'm gonna probably put videos up like Josh was last year.
There it is. See, people, we've been busy here. You guys think that they're retired ball players and they just sit around and do nothing? No, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's a lot of stress for them. It's almost like you guys wish you were playing. That way you don't have to deal with this.
Yeah, playing would be like the perfect thing right now.
Yeah, hey, that's funny. I said that the other day. I said there's a part of it where it's like my life on the road playing baseball was 1,000 times easier from like a work standpoint. Now, obviously the stress level is significantly higher playing baseball, but doing this, it's just, I mean, I had to get, here's the deal, right? So I kept breaking my lawnmower. The belt kept breaking. So my in-laws have this big art show coming up, and I keep breaking the lawnmower, and they need to mow. So I have to keep fixing the lawnmower. Well, this morning at 7:30, I got up, there's dew on the grass, and I cut the lawn for the first time in about 2 weeks. And it took me about 2.5 hours. And
that's, what?
Yeah, that's my life.
That's hard. That's a lot harder than playing every fifth day and catching a knuckleball. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot harder, dude. Up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Oh, I haven't seen 6 o'clock in the morning, and who knows how long.
Oh my God! See, so
there's actually a subject I wanted to touch with.
Go
you,
for it.
Josh, because we played in New York, and they asked me about it. Was it yesterday or a couple of days on the radio here in Toronto? What do you have on Owen's tweets? I'm sure Bethel, ooh, you know, we were, yeah, talking about that, and an owner tweeting about how the hitters have been pretty terrible. Like, and I like how they're trying to downplay it. Like even Lindor came out and said, like, hey, yeah, we deserve to be criticized. We haven't been good. But how much do you think that, like, if you were in that clubhouse, are you saying, obviously he's the guy that pays you, but are you kind of like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like, what, I'm sure you heard and you read what he said, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'll read what he says. It says, it's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have more disciplined approach to plugging in OPS numbers go live, right? Like, so I saw it and my initial take was like, players play, coaches coach, owners own the team. I think what he was trying to do, I think the message was like, slap in the face, it's time to wake up a little bit, right? Like, this is, yeah, borderline like Jerry, this is like Jerry Jones. This is like George Steinbrenner. And I tell you, I'm not against this. And I'll tell you why, because the trainer for the Yankees, Gene Monahan and Stevie Donahue were always around in spring training. And Steve's still there with the Yankees. And when I wasn't playing, I was sitting on the bench and I would ask Steve about, like, hey, how was the boss, right? And this is how the boss was. Like, obviously he didn't have Twitter. He just walked up to the guys right to the face and pretty much, hey, you're worth it. Fix it, clean it up, or somebody's going to pay for it. I actually like it. I think, I don't know, like, from a mental standpoint, if it like sparks the players. Like, I just kind of like water under the bridge if I'm on the team. To me, like, you listen to it, take it in. You're not going to change anything. Like, yeah, hitting in the major leagues is freaking hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was my point. The way I answered it was like, the pitchers are trying too. It's not like, yeah, the pitchers are going out there and saying, "Oh, well, it's the New York Mets. We're just gonna let them hit." The pitchers are out there. They're facing legit big league pitching, you know, every night out. And yes, I get it. The expectations on that team were super high and are still and still are. And I'm sure he's feeling a little bit of the heat because he put this team together with thinking that this was a winning team. And he brings Baez from Chicago Cubs and all that stuff. But at the same time, I get it. I get what you're saying. But I'm just like, man, like, how about we give a little credit to the pitchers? The pitchers, yeah, are always forgotten ones in this. And it's, you know, I feel like it's the same with what's going on here with Vladdy right now. Everyone's like, what's wrong with Vladdy? What's wrong with Vladdy? You know, is he wearing off? Did it wear off? And I'm like, well, we're 3 quarters into the season. He pretty much carried this team for a lot of the season. And there's a time where pitchers, and you know, Josh, at this point, you know what this guy can do. And the scouting reports are like, we're not going to let this guy beat us. And we're going to pitch around him and we're going to let him expand the zone. And we're going to try and pitch him better. And I feel like that's what's happened. Pitchers are just pitching him better. And and he's in a little bit of a funk. It happens. Like, I'm still hitting over 300, so that's damn good enough to be at this point still hitting over 300. Is he producing like he was in the first half? No, but again, pitchers are making adjustments, and I think that's where I feel like a lot of this thing gets lost. It's just like, yeah, we forget that there's the scouting report is, there's more video, there's more, you know, what was he doing early in the season? Oh, he was doing this, and okay, we're going to stay away from that spot, or we're going to make him expand, whatever it is.
Well, I'll say this to the Vladdy stuff before I circle back. I think when Springer is out of that lineup,
yeah,
like, listen, Bo's a great player. They're a very talented bunch. They're inexperienced, especially now. Like, this is when the experience kind of prevails and steps up more than the young kids. And yeah, they're still young. Like, they're still learning the ropes, learning what it is to play 162. And I do believe, like, last year was a 60-game season. Of course, like, they make the playoffs, are a good, fun, young team. They sneak into the playoffs. But, like, the expectations, if you truly felt that they were going to win that division playing 162 games, I would have called you crazy. Yeah. But I think if you take Springer out of that lineup, it's a sigh of relief for the pitchers and game calling and all of that. So I'm sure Vladdy's getting pitched a heck of a lot tougher than he was early on, as you alluded to, Ricky, the freaking scouting reports. The guy's got 400 or 500 at bats at this point, or 400 at bats. Like, all the numbers are kind of like in line, and they know where the strengths and weaknesses are, and they just exploit them, and pitchers are good.
Especially this day and age, where every single arm he's going to face is fresh arm coming out of the pen, ready to throw darts right at him.
And I think the other thing is, and I get it. Everyone's fatigued, everyone, but the amount of swings that you guys take, it's crazy, Josh. And you know, being a hitter, like, you guys are taking BP every day, on top of, you know, swings in the cage, on top of you know, hitting off the tee, all that stuff. And I feel like eventually, to certain guys, it probably catches up.
Yeah, let me draw a light to that. So that's exactly right, Ricky. So imagine coming into spring training February 10th, let's call it, right? You hit in the cage in the morning, you hit batting practice, and then most of the time in spring training, everybody's panicked and they hit afterwards, especially before games start. You do that all of spring training, every day in spring training. You then get to the season, you get to the field at 1 o'clock, you go do your flips in the cage, you then go hit the curveball machine or the fastball machine on the field before you even hit batting practice. That's called early batting practice. And then you hit batting practice, and then you play in the game. And I understand, like, you don't hit the breaking balls on the machine every day off on the field, but there is – And there's some older players that I've spoke with about this, and they say the same thing. They say, y'all get to the field way too early, and you do too much. Like, you do too much. And I think there's something to be said. Do now. Where are we? August 24th, like, these guys might have taken a million swings since February 10th. And mind you, they've been hitting all winter.
Yeah.
They do too much. And that's the other day when I went to the Dodger game last week. They had just flown in from New York, and night game, they flew in. They didn't take BP, and I texted a couple people I know that not taking BP is one of the best days ever, because it's like you still do your work in the cage, but it's not having to go out there and do that. Those 2 hours, it just feels like a day off. Is that true?
Yeah, I have a different perspective of it, being a position player, and I felt this more in the Pacific Coast League. When I was out west playing in AAA, I always liked – so, for example, we don't fly in. You fly in the morning of the day of the game, right?
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wait. I didn't know this. Wait. Hold on. So, in AAA, you fly in that morning and then play that night?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, fuck that.
So, but same thing in the major leagues. If you had an overnight flight – You get in late.
Yeah.
I always like to do batting practice that day and then have the second day as a show and go. right? Like I almost needed it to move around. And that I was a big fan of that. Lou Marson was my manager in Salt Lake City, and we talked about that, and we did it, and guys responded well to that, more than just you feel sluggish when you either A, get in the morning or get in late at night. You feel sluggish the next day, but the following day that's when it hits you.
Right? Really?
I didn't know that. I always was mad because I was like, fuck, we gotta shag the day we land. Damn it. I'm doing AAA. Yeah, and you hear a lot of I'm sure all the guys that were bitching were pitchers.
Everybody. Yeah. Hey, you know what's funny? Hey, what's great to that point is the hitters. It's always optional BP on that.
They're all hitting.
And yeah, mostly everybody hits, but then the pitchers are like, God damn, we gotta go out and shag. What the hell? This is bullshit. They don't fit the option. They just have to go shag.
Wait, everybody has to shag?
The pitch
usually
at
AAA.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Unless
you're starting that day.
No. Yeah. All right. Let's circle back to the Mets owner because I want to get this perspective because I hear what you're saying totally. And again, this is we're not doing sports talk radio here, but I just want to hear the perspective of how you guys think about it. So this was Steve Cohen, the Mets owner, who was a billionaire. The tweet was, it showed it's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive, right? But this guy is also one who comes in and says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Kind of like Jerry Jones, and you mentioned it, George Steinbrenner. If Steinbrenner would have had Twitter, he would have been all over everybody else, right? But then our intern, Graham, who is watching right now, sends this tweet that the week before.
Where's Graham?
Yeah, Graham is back, the Oregon Duck. We'll talk to him later on. We'll check in with Graham because he's been a little elusive too, man. But he also sent this tweet. I just visited the players in the clubhouse. They're ready and in a good frame of mind for this game. That was the week before. All right. So I don't follow him. I don't pay attention. I don't really pay attention to anything New York Mets related. But when you have an owner like this who is tweeting up and trying to be the famous guy, okay, I have a couple questions because I was around when the McCourts were there. So the players just kind of rolled their eyes at Frank McCourt and his wife and all the antics, right? Do the players even care about an owner?
It just depends. Like a guy that's this visible, I guess you do. I come from the school though, and this is where I draw the line. And this could be halfway controversial because he is the owner of the team. But I will say this: that room is for those 25 guys. Like,
okay,
you don't let the players police themselves, right? They call that micromanaging. What he's doing is micromanaging. Don't micromanage. Let the players be the players. The players, you think they want to go out and be horseshit?
That's what I always say. I'm like, you really think players want to go out there and struggle?
Yeah, like, you know what? And to his last tweet of that, of, you know, how does this happen? Well, the point being is, like, guys are going to go through slumps. Unfortunately, everybody's going through it at the same time. But I do believe, and Major League Baseball can be at fault for this, as well as the Players Association. They're taking the piece of the players being able to police themselves, and with clubhouse dues and team meetings, like, some of the best meetings I've ever been in when guys get together and sit around the room and figure out how the hell do we do this? What's going on? Why are we struggling? And they have plenty of leaders on that team. Freaking KP, Pilar, McCann, Lindor, now Baez, Pete Alonso. The list goes on. They have the leadership there.
Yeah. I just look at it.
They've taken it amongst themselves, but I think that's where he steps out of line, is being in the room personally. That's my take.
My perception of that tweet is aimed at the guys on the seventh line, the ones who are buying the shirts, the ones that are sitting up near the foul pole. That tweet is aimed at the cheap seats. It's to get the guy, Vinny from Long Island, who's like, hey, yo, Mets this and that. Yeah, it's like, you see, because the same thing that guy, Joe Lunchbox, is saying, I'm going to do this. Yeah, the owner thinks like me. He's trying to win the favor with the fan. That's what it just feels like, where it's like, hey, guy, the day you visited the clubhouse, like Graham showed us, that day, they lost. You know, like, oh, the guy's in a great mood. They lost. So now he's going to be like, oh, they're not in a great mood. Like, it just reeks of reaching out to people. Because remember, he came in and said, I'm going to clean up what the Mets had before. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And it's like, dude, because billionaires don't know how to stay in their lane because nobody ever tells them no.
Yeah, right. And that they, yeah, it is. It becomes micromanaging. Like, let me tell you, Ricky, answer this question for me. How many times, I don't care what happened the day before, how many times have you had a teammate show up to the ballpark the next day and didn't want to talk to anybody or was grumpy? Like, that never happened. Guys, every day, we're professional baseball players. Every day was a new day. You can go, you could be go 0 for 4, but you could also go 4 for 4 that day. So you started fresh. You didn't care. Well, you did care what kind of slump you were in, but it didn't change who – it doesn't change most guys who they are as people when they step into that room, personally.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And the thing is that, yeah, one tweet like that is not really going to get a club and say, like, let's go. We got to go. Like, and they're going to be, like, banging their heads in their lockers, you know, like – baseball's not like that. You know, it's such a grind of a sport for 162 games. And Josh, you understand when it gets to these months, you know, the August to September, it fatigue does play a role in it. And honestly, I think the strong minds is what survives. Those are the winning teams usually. The guys who are just like, you're mentally drained, but you know that you got to keep pushing. And you're seeing it right now with certain teams that they're almost like hitting their stride. We were waiting. Everyone was waiting for the Yankees to hit their stride. And it's almost like right now they started picking it up. It's like they were dragging ass all year. And then all of a sudden they're 10 wins, I think, a 10 straight wins. The Dodgers, you know, were kind of like, not like they were like struggling or anything, but they were not what people expected the Dodgers to run away with the NL West, and now they're finally hitting their stride and they're getting it going again. And I think the good teams are, that's what they do. It's like they, not that they want to half-ass it or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying, but it's like at the right time, they just start kind of picking it up. And obviously they had a Max Scherzer and a Trey Turner. It just completely flipped that team around too.
So you're telling me it's not like in Major League where everybody rallies against the owner and said, we're going to do this, guys? That doesn't happen?
This might be happening in the Mets clubhouse.
and then for everybody to come out, hey, okay, let me tell you this, as a reporter, when everybody on the team and all the players say everything's fine and everybody has the same talking points, holy fuck, you know it's a mess. Like when everybody is like, they're on the same, like, oh no, we're good, we're here for the team. Yeah, right. Bullshit. Yeah.
But then the last thing you want to do is say like, you know what, like I took offense to that, because in New York, it would be every single newspaper.
No, you can't like, do that.
That's a story for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. If, like, let's say one of their big, like, let's say Lindor was like, hey, man, like, I don't know what Cohen is doing. Like, if he just came out and blew up Cohen, then I feel, but what is Lindor going to say? I mean, the guy just got, what, $300 million from him. So he's going to agree with him.
Yeah. Lindor probably has no clue who Cohen is.
Well, the thing about it is, he doesn't have to agree with him. Because he's owed $300 million.
Guaranteed.
Like, those are the guys that need to – and maybe they did it internally amongst themselves. Maybe they closed the door and Lindor stood up and spoke and said, listen, this is our team. This is about us. It's not about him. And maybe he did that. We don't know that, and nor should we know that. It's none of our business. But we don't have to say it to the media. I love the token lines to the media. Like, you know, hey, great. We're keeping our heads up. We're trying to put good at-bats together. Hey, we're pounding the zone. You're like, oh, uncle.
That's why.
Because you can do that in you could do that in Tampa Bay. Nobody would care. Yeah. Nobody
would care. They wouldn't even know what happened.
It's a shame. I mean, that team is running away with the AL East, and they're, what, getting like 5,000 games. It's crazy.
Tampa's in first?
Yeah.
Killing it.
Really?
Best thing in baseball.
And Ian Snell on the way out was like ripping him for the way they treated him, right? When he went to the Padres? Blake Snell. When he was like ripping him and was like, yeah, anyways, whatever. Like, nobody paid attention. I didn't even know Tampa's in first.
That team just seems, I mean, ever since I remember when I was in 2009 and before that when they went to the World Series in 2008, I think. And it's just that team just they get rid of guys, and if you're sitting there scratching your head and you're wondering why they got rid of that guy, and then they just bring in another guy to replace him, and he's just as good, if not better.
Yeah, and then the guy that was so good that went somewhere else that they let go is now horseshit. You're like, oh.
It's crazy. You read that payroll too. That team payroll, it's nowhere near what any other team has.
Their payroll is Lindor's per diem. It doesn't matter. It's
per day,
right? Poppy. Now, Tolly, let me ask you this. You played in New York. You used to have Twitter. So you got rid of it because the fans are crazy. Am I onto something where Cohen and those fans are really like, hell yeah? Like, they're really...
They rally right around him. When he bought the team, he stood up in front of the cameras and said, this is about the fan base. We're going to listen to the fans. Like, if you go back and watch some of his early interviews, it was all about the fans. So that's all he's doing is he's trying to rally the fan troop.
Sounds like a president. Anyways. All right, so... Ricky, I know you guys are busy, got things to do, but our boy, I'm going to show you a mug right now, Tolly, and you're really going to love this, all right? Here it is.
Believe it.
It's from Tolly. Tolly is about to start Ted Lasso today, Ricky. He and the beautiful wife, Catherine, are about to start Ted Lasso. He has no idea what it's about. So.
That's a good show.
You're going to love it. It's Ted Lasso is a corny coach from Wichita State, which, by the way, the Shockers don't have a football team. He goes to England to take over a premier team because the owner says, I want to lose. So it's kind of like what we're talking about with Cohen. I'm like, oh, okay, everybody rallies around. All of a sudden, he turns things around. Ted Lasso is there with his Midwestern values, just like you, Tolly, a Midwestern guy, golly gee, shucks, all that other good stuff. And he puts up...
Oh, I have a terrible mouth.
But he puts up this Believe sign in the locker with just that little blue right there. That's just tape. He just gets like painter's tape and he puts it on top of the sign. And so Ted Lasso, so Believe. You're going to love it. Ricky, right? He's going to love Ted Lasso?
Yeah, man. One of the guys in our group chat had already seen it, Marco. And then I started watching it with Cara, my wife, because Cara was like, hey, I heard this show's really good. So then I came back one day and I was like to the group chat, I was like, you guys have to watch Ted Lasso. And everyone's like, what the fuck is that? And Beto got in it, and he's hooked. And now everyone in our group chat is, like, completely hooked. They just have these funny-ass characters, man. You got to watch it. It's good. And he does have some good, great quotes in there, too, about life. And it's kind of cool. Yeah. It's really good.
Be a goldfish.
I'm on it tonight.
It's on Apple TV. If you want to binge on something with Catherine, do that one.
It's pretty cool. Hey, can you send me your Apple TV account, though? Mine doesn't work.
Yeah, it's Graham Metzger at oregon.edu. And let's bring him in right now. There he is. Our intern, Graham Metzger, just woke up. Graham, how's the show going? Let's check in with you.
It's going great. I'm really enjoying today's episode. Beto, I really like how you said, you know, it's not just like sports talk radio. You know, I like how we can mix in the sports talk with, you know, tractor talk.
Hey Graham, what you been up to, man, these last few weeks that we haven't had a show?
I've been working at the OC Fair, actually.
You're a carny?
Yeah, he's a carny. I love that. He's selling those little
I'm just a ticket boy.
He's the guy
right this way.
Wow, he had connections to the OC Fair, and he didn't even let us know.
I wanted to go take the kids, but it's kind of hard to get tickets. But it's cool, Graham. The reason Graham is here today because his father Gary, who's a professor at Long Beach State, sent me a text. Hey, thanks for everything you've done for Graham this summer. But can you please get him something else to do? He's sitting around the house twiddling his thumbs. So I'm like, wait. I'm over here thinking Graham is working hard. You know, making some promos. Nothing. He's just being a bum ass kid.
Wow, Graham, you're gonna take it like this, huh?
I was not ready to get put on blast. Wow.
Graham, what have you been doing?
I mean, really, like, my job just ended, like the OC Fair just ended. I don't know why my dad is talking all that crazy stuff, but
All right, Graham.
That's all right, Graham. It's okay.
All right, so Graham, you're going to be a junior at University of Oregon?
Yes, sir.
And when do you leave?
2 weeks from now.
All right, so in 2 weeks, Graham's going to be all right. So Graham, all right, now when the fall semester starts, are you still going to be able to help us out?
It might be tough my first quarter. I think I'll probably have classes right around this time.
Okay, well, you could still watch the podcast later and then do the video.
Oh, you know it. You know it.
All right, so we're going to keep Graham on. All right. So, Graham.
Why don't you guys should have to watch this for your class, first off.
Hey.
Hey,
I learned way more here, honestly.
If you do that, man, you'd get major, major points. Yeah. If you just put it on the projector and for an hour and just let it just go off. And just say, hey, look, this is what I've been doing this summer. I've been interning here, and you guys got to listen to these guys talk.
We call it the three-ring circus.
Yeah. Graham, is it the Phil Knight School of Journalism there?
It's not the Phil Knight. It's like the Eric Allen School of Journalism. Okay. Something like that. But
everything else is Phil Knight.
Every single thing else. The dorms, the bathrooms, the everything.
All right, Graham. All right, we'll check back in with you in a little bit, see how the end of the show goes. Good kid. He's going to be working with me Friday. I'm doing a high school game, so he's going to be there with me. All right, so now, as we wrap up, Ricardo, what the hell is going on in Canada? You Sports Center or Sports Century?
No,
Sportsnet.
Yeah, we don't fuck with Sportscentric.
Graham, delete that. All right, so let's start over. Ricardo, Ricky, you've been doing TV, Sportsnet in Canada. You've been wearing makeup on TV.
Yeah, dude, can you believe that? No, yeah, it's been fun. I mean, since I was in town, they asked me if I'd come do a couple shows, and obviously, being in TV is a lot different. You know, Beto, you know what I feel like? That when they give you the countdown in your ear and you're like 5, 4, 3, 2, dude, my heart starts beating so fast. It's crazy. The adrenaline rush that I get just because you start realizing, like, what starts going through my head is like, oh my God, all of Canada is about to tune in right now. And not that all Canada tunes in, but the, you know, Sportsnet Blue Jays are televised all across Canada. So I'm always like, damn, like, this is crazy. Like, it's being done through the whole country. And yeah, and then after that, it's just talk baseball, and obviously having somebody in your ear, you know, telling you to wrap up your thoughts and stuff like that. It's been an adjustment. It was an adjustment. I did three shows. The first one was pretty cool because I was kind of the guest. The second one and third one were I was the main guy next to Jamie Campbell because Joe Siddle took a bit of a vacation there, and that was a bit different. I'm not gonna lie, I struggled the second show, but the third one I got better. And I feel like it's a game of adjustment, you know, within the game of TV. And you know, I was just a little bit nervous, and I got stuck a few times. Maybe it's only things that I noticed because everyone was like, "What are you talking about?" And yeah, but it was cool. It's been cool. It's a whole different thing. Getting to prep for a show, it's like a game. You get there 2-3 hours before you go on TV, and you have a meeting about what you're going to talk about. And then after that, you go down, do makeup. They take the shine off the top of my head, and then it's just
showtime. I love, yeah.
Tolly, have you done TV?
No.
You haven't done TV? No, you've done radio.
I got a face for radio.
No. But you got the animation for TV. You're going to be going on. I'm telling you, doing this podcast actually helps for you guys with broadcasting aspiration because you have to look in the camera. You're looking what's going on. You're talking and making succinct points. Like here, we can tell a story. Rick, it's like, okay, you got 30 seconds to give me a breakdown. Bam. Like, what the, how am I going to break down a dude in 30 seconds? And then
when Sportsnet during the game, they come in with a fourth inning update and an eighth inning update. So you're hoping in that first four innings, you find something to talk about. And then all of a sudden the host, Jamie Campbell, will turn to you and be like, hey, what do you want to talk about? And you got 30 seconds to do it. So quick. Like, okay, cool. So then, and as Beto, you've told me, 30 seconds is a long time. Yeah. For me, seeing your reaction, Josh, you think 30 seconds, you're like, oh shit, how am I going to get my point across? What I found myself doing is trying to do everything in 10 seconds and trying to get in and get out. Whereas like, no, you still got 20 seconds. Like, take your time. Like, you're going to get to 30 seconds. You have more time than you think you do. And I did not, you know?
Yeah.
So it's different.
It's right though, right, Rick? You could pitch in front of 50,000, Yankee Stadium, Fenway, but sitting on a set with only two other people and then but the cameras and everybody looking at you, and then all of a sudden you get that little I still get it. I've been doing this a lot of years, and it's like the 5, 4, 3, and then all of a sudden we're live, and you're like, and you're the one supposed to be talking because I'm the main host. It's like, and you still get that little it's a cool feeling.
You know what? I have a new, and I told them, I was like, I have a new appreciation for this. The prep.
Thank you.
Not even the main guys sitting at the table, but even the producers, the camera guys, making sure that you're looking at the right camera, all that stuff. Like, just the amount of work that goes into, and these guys are on TV every single day. It's crazy, man. You got to run out of stuff to say, but at the same time, game of baseball, you always see something new, I feel like, every day. Yeah. So it gives you a tough point. But like, you guys that sit there and make it look easy, it's like, I'm like, man, I'm blown away, because it's not, is, I mean, obviously with time and with practice, it's easier, but it's fun, and it's been a cool little learning experience. And then I got to do another show with Tim and Friends, and that one is more of an hour. And I told Tim, I was like, this feels more of a podcast type, and he was like, dude, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And that's more just, I felt like that one, I felt like I was talking to you guys, because I'm just talking to him. You have a mic in front of you, and there's a screen or a camera, but they're like, don't even worry about the camera, talk to Tim the whole time. And I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah, totally. We got to get you some TV reps, totally.
Well, I don't know. I like the radio stuff. This is great. The thing is, you know what I like about it, though?
You have a face for the radio, Josh. That's for sure.
That's the truth. You know, the thing about it is this, it feels more like I don't feel like I'm talking. That's why I have a problem. And I bet if you go back and watch all of our film,
look.
I do a very poor job of looking into the camera.
You don't have to. Right? You don't have to.
No, I know. And that's why I like to sit here and talk with my hands and look around when I talk and all of that. That's why I enjoy the radio more than anything.
Yeah, and you've been doing some radio recently, right?
Yeah, I've done a few little hits there with Scotty Mac and Ziggy, and I was on with
Joe. I thought you were all right. I was hoping I'd catch you yesterday because I was driving, and they're like, and our next guest, Josh, totally, stay tuned. But I had to get out of the car, and I was like, damn it, I missed it. But I saw that you were on.
Yeah, hey, Ricky, you know what's interesting? I was telling Beto before you got on today, was we've taken a month off from doing this, right?
Yeah.
Right after we stopped doing it, I had a couple hits on the radio, and then I didn't have any, and I had one just the other day. And the other day, I felt so out of tune, so out of rhythm. Just because, like, even doing it every Tuesday, I could hop on the radio at any point in time, and I feel more confident.
Yeah.
But having not done anything for a few weeks, I was kind of lost.
Come on, totally. You're used to every 5 days. Let's go, bro.
It's true what Beto says. Doing this definitely has helped me a lot. And even like when I get on the radio, it's like cake. Like, it's like they ask me a question, boom, I'm ready with the answer. And this has a lot to do with it. If I didn't do this, I'd be like, because Beto's come over to the house and he's helped me with, hey, stay away from this word. Stay away from this word. And don't use these catchy phrases that everyone uses. It's TV, get in, get out, but make your point loud and clear. And stuff like that, obviously, even in the radio, you try to stay away from the you knows and stuff like that. So it's the radio. Yeah, I can see how the radio can be a lot easier, obviously.
It's all a lot of fun. At the end of the day, just be yourself, have fun, and then don't be that cheesy guy trying too hard on TV, because those guys never last. They're cool for like a year or two on a season, and then all of a sudden you're like, that act got old. Especially, like, I was telling Ricky, like, with radio, it's like, because sports talk radio, it's to get people, they complain about everything. Just remind them, like, hey, you have 3 hours to suck on the radio. Baseball players have one at bat to suck. So it's okay.
And the other thing I always told myself, and I'm sure Josh would probably be the same. You don't want to be that guy that acts like the game's easy and paints this picture that like when a guy's struggling, it's because he sucks. No, you want to take the fans into the mind of what's going on with the player and stuff like that. For me, that's the goal that I have. Like, why is you know, for example, let's use Ryu. Why is Ryu struggling? Oh, well, maybe he's leaving. You know, he's not getting to that inner half like he once was, and that changeup is staying up in the zone. Why? Because maybe, you know, whatever, you break him down. That's what I like. Not, oh yeah, like he's ran out of gas. Like, that's the easy thing to say.
Yeah, no shit. Everybody knows you ran out of gas. You have to be a rocket to figure that out. I tell you, when I did the 9 games on the road doing the color, that was a talking point for me, was like, hey, almost be a little more critical, right? Like, Randall Grichuk was struggling at the time, and I said, I've been there. I know how the guy feels. I'll tell you how he feels, but I'm not going to say that he's horseshit. Yeah. I'd roll him out and I'd hit him second. You guys keep moving him down in the lineup, I'd hit him second. Like,
yeah.
You can't. Yeah, the game's too freaking hard, man. And these guys that blast the players, I have no time. I'll turn it right off.
And I think what people appreciate is when you go into that insight, and I get messages where it's like, dude, I love the insight. You know, I love when you take us into the mind of 60 feet, 6 inches. I love when you take us into the mind of what's going on in a 3-2 count. That to me means more than saying, oh, well, he left that ball, you know, down the middle, and that's what happens. You know, obviously that's what happens. It's, you know, maybe he didn't finish. You show, you break it down. You're like, oh, yeah, it looked like he just didn't finish that changeup or whatever, you know, just – dissect it a little bit more, because we've been there. We know what it's like. We know what it's like to be successful. We know what it's like to be to struggle and to go into a slump, you know, from the pitching side, from the hitting side. We know all that. And to sit there and be critical. And then I always tell the guys, because the TV guys are like, is this on my – do guys watch this? I was like, this show is fucking on every TV. Guys are walking from room to room, and they sit there, and if they hear their name or they hear something, they stare. They sit there and stare, and they're like, oh, fuck that guy.
Yeah, it's the best. The backup catcher's coming. The backup catcher's playing today, and he's 0 for his last 11. Like, I should be the talking point. That was always – I used to get on Greg John in my mind about that. Like, a guy would blast me. I'm like, guy, if this team is waiting for me to go – we got problems.
Yeah, but, you know, like, for me, they're like, hey, if you want to be a little bit, if you want to, like, I was mad in Seattle when they took Ryu out after 89 pitches, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna go on air and I'm gonna say, like, I'm not blasting the coach, but I would say, like, hey, I want to see my horse go 115 pitches. He was looking good. Yeah, he ran into a little bit of trouble, but let's let him work out of trouble. Like, let's stop the whole, like, third time through the lineup thing. If he's been dealing with that. So,
hey, sorry. Hey, guys, that's Ricky's little jab to the front offices, saying, like, hey, let's go. Let the freaking horse go. That's his way, instead of just
being – but I'm not calling anybody out, and
no.
And I said, you know, Charlie probably has his thing behind it, and you respect it. I mean, he's a manager.
And you're there for your opinion. You just say, if I don't know anything, but damn it, I want to see this guy go.
Oh, you play in the big league. You know a lot of shit. I'll tell you that. That's the other thing I'm tired of it. You know, Ricky, I know. We all know. We've had this conversation.
I'm telling you, Tully would be the guy that guys would be looking at this screen and be like, oh, fuck you, Josh. But then I guarantee you, Josh would be the guy that would not be scared to be down on the field talking to those guys and shooting the shit.
Now, at the end of the day.
Like, you know what? He would be the first guy to go and say, hey, man, I had to say it, but though. Like, don't take it personal, you know? And he'd be that guy. I feel like when you have respect, when guys don't show their faces in the clubhouse and they're the ones talking the most shit.
Oh, the worst. That's what the worst. Like. Now, Ricky, let me ask you something, and Ben will help out here too, because I'm interested to know. When you guys do the TV and they say, so use the Randall Grichuk thing for example, right? Do your producers in the morning meetings or whenever you do the meeting say, Ricky, here's effectively what you have to say, put it in your own words, but it has to be said?
No, they haven't done that with me. And it, you know, for me, I feel like they've given me the reins of like, say like, hey, what do you want your talking points to be? And I say, okay, this is what I want to talk about. This is what I want to talk about. This is what I want to talk about. I even sometimes text Beto and be like, what do you got on this? Or like, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this. And then he's like, good, good, good. Boom. Hit these things, hit these things, hit these things. And I'm like, I feel like Beto's my coach through it all. Seriously. Like it's helped me a lot because he's done it for fucking, I don't know how many years, you know, so the guy knows what he's talking about, and it's been very helpful. But nobody has ever said that, hey, this point has to be made. I think there's guys, you know, Joe Sitto is there, I think, maybe for that. But even him, like, I love his analysis. And when he brings something up, you're just like, damn, like, he's super sharp. And he delivers his point without being more like taking the fan into the mind of his expertise is catching. And I know he was, you know, not happy with the way they lost the other day, where Kirk was on down on one knee with two outs and pass ball in the eighth inning, pass ball with two strikes and it goes under his leg. The tying run comes in and Robbie Ray's spoiled. He could have gotten 8 innings and runs. Instead, it's 8 innings, one run. And he was critical, but he broke it down so good, man. And I was like, that is fucking dope. That's dope. That's what I'm talking about. You broke it down. You're saying like, okay, you want to catch down on one, it's fine. Zero, nobody on, whatever, do it. But runner on third base, you got to be a motherfucking goat, you know, and you got to make sure that run doesn't come across.
Yeah, but I would combat that. And I'm only going to say this because I've done both. I've been through kind of both ways. Like, every guy is their own kind of entity. Like, what's the conversation if he's in a conventional stance and the ball goes under his legs too? We're just like, well, you got to get down quicker? Or why does it shed light on it just because he's on one knee? To be quite frank, all he has to do is put his other knee down. Like, theoretically, it should be easier, right? He's halfway to the ground. It's like, he missed the ball because he was on one knee. Or... Like that. I think that's the debate, right? Like, we could
talk. Yeah, about that seems to be the debate, I think it's not even because it's his style. It'd be different if it was his style, Josh, but I think it's the new age style, and I think that's where I feel like old school guys are like, hey man, like, a conventional stance will get you in a better position. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know what you're talking about. But they're saying the conventional stance will get you in a better position to be able to block that ball. I mean, he had no chance on that ball. It's also coming
up. And that's the situation right there, totally, where, back to your original question of, like, did they tell you what to say? They don't tell you what to say producers-wise, but they'll show you tape that they want to use. And it's up to you as the host to say, yeah, that's cool. They can show you the tape, but at the end of the day, you're the one who's going to say whatever you want. So Sittle, that's hopefully I'm saying his name right.
Yeah, Joe Sittle.
So, and a guy like Ricky or a guy like you, when you're up there, the only thing that matters is your opinion, and it's always you're the expert, you're the opinion. So whatever it is you're going to say with conviction, and the producer might angle the tape one way, but you can always say whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And it's not like the producers are saying.
Why I think you'd be great for TV, Josh. I mean, you really would. I mean, the fact that you have this expertise and you would be able to defend both sides would make it an even more interesting topic, you know, rather than you're swaying one way and it's only one way, because like you're saying, maybe on one, you teach the guy that if you're on one knee, you know, you can still move just as good as if you were in a conventional stance.
Well, and it goes on because there's so many more intricate parts, right? Like, the guy throws a 3-2 pitch and he's out of a conventional stance and he jams his left knee into the ground and the umpire balls it. Like, there's versus being on the knee, like making a clean catch, whatever. Yeah. There's so many different avenues. I mean, we do not have enough time.
Yeah, and then also,
although we should, I would love to go through that process one day. I think it would be interesting.
And also with TV, it's you're talking, but you're. Don't want to come off as the guy back in my day, guy, because then, look, everybody hated Tim McCarver, right? Because when in my day I did this, and all of a sudden, now he's not doing it. Oh, man, Tim McCarver was so good, and he was refreshing and so honest. So TV is a different animal of, like, you want to be honest, but no matter what, somebody's going to get mad because you're, oh, wait, why are you talking bad? Like, the other day I said, like, I got asked on CBS, like, oh, USC is the favorite of the Pac-12. And I was like, they should be. They better win. If they don't, then they're not good. fucking tweets from people. Oh, you're hating on that. I'm like, oh God. Like, I'm not, like, just be honest and whatever it is you're saying, you believe it and that's it. Like, are there guys on TV who are just team kiss ups? Without a doubt. That's the reason the front office is the one who selects who's on the broadcast teams. Like, that's where it comes from. It's not like the TV networks. The front office is going to say, yeah, we want this person because they're going to talk up our organization all the time. It's
like I said, like Joe, pro's pro, man. Yeah, like perfect. His points are really loud and clear, and he comes off as a guy. I mean, obviously, he knows what he's talking about, but I love listening to it, to his insight. He broke down Vladdy the other day, and I was like, man, this is great. Like, yeah. Stuff that I'm learning how to do this, I can learn from that.
Yeah.
No, he's not a guy that comes off and says, like, well, like you said, back in my day or back in this day. No, he gets to the point and says, okay, this is what I want to get across, and this is how I'm going to get it across without coming off as a cocky asshole, you know? Like, yeah.
There's a lot of those too. There's a lot of those. It's always the guys who are like, I hate the media, I hate the media. Hey, I'm retired. Can I be on the media? Sure, no problem. Yeah.
That's so true.
All right, Graham, are you still there? All right, young kid, good episode today?
Definitely a great bounce back episode. Good to be back with you guys.
Wait, hold on, bounce back? Hold on a minute, Graham. A bounce back would have meant last week was horseshit.
I mean, if there was nothing last week and the week before, then I say we bouncing back.
Okay. All right.
He doubled down.
Graham, I'm going to need you to loosen up a little bit too. And not like, I feel like we're interviewing you and you're giving us these casual answers.
Yeah.
I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Need to loosen up a little
That's
bit.
That's my bad. Hey, I got caught off guard when we started talking.
Yeah.
When my dad text messages started coming, I was like, oh, dang. All right, time press conference. Let me get my suit and tie on.
All right, everybody. Graham, make a highlight of this. Find some things that we can post on social media. Thanks so much for Ricky and Josh Tolley. Another edition of Let's Go Ricky Roll with Josh Tolley. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe. We're back. And then hopefully we're back next week. Not too sure. Depends if Ricky's new house is fixed.
We pushed our flight back to next Thursday, so that's for sure now. So, yeah, if I should be able to hop on here on Tuesday. Usually this is when Diego naps, so it's perfect. Okay.
And Tolley, we'll get you the tractors fixed. We'll send the tractor doctor to fix everything.
I fixed it myself.
You're going to talk to Mr. Deere to make sure they get you a new tractor. John Deere.
Please, would you please speak with him?
Oh, we got a guy. We got a guy. And then we'll see if we have a guest next week. But it was a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody. Subscribe. Make sure you take the pictures. Let us know. Another edition. Let's go, Ricky Raw with Josh Tolley.